Hello, everyone. My presentation will be a little bit different. This is a video of my hometown of Bristol, but I work all over the world. And my role in this speech is not to discuss the workings of blockchain, nor is it to provide recommendations on how to eradicate poverty. And my intention instead is to situate both of these topics in a global context that demonstrates the relationship between them and the urgency under which we must act. So regardless of whether we sit here representing a developed or a developing economy, this is something we need to consider very carefully. I've spent my entire career consulting with and developing leaders from companies all over the world, and I'm fortunate to be able to work both inside industry and have an external perspective on the industry. And it's enabled me to see some things differently, perhaps, than when people find themselves within those industries. Many years ago, I read a book. Well, I tried to read a book called The Shield of Achilles. The reason I say I tried to read it was because no matter how many times I tried to read it, I couldn't really understand what the book was saying. And so I gave up. I put it back on my bookshelf, where it gathered dust for many years. And now 20 years into my career, I find myself coming back to this book and coming back to the words in the book, which at one point made no sense to me at all. Politics will no longer drive the global direction. But instead, we will become market-led. Global corporations will hold more power than governments in terms of influencing whole societies. Within these corporations, leaders will become the people that shape our world, dictate our international status, and set direction. Increasingly, politicians will wield less power. Suddenly now, the message seems clear to me. And it was with some shock I realized that in the last 20 years, I was living through the transition that this author had predicted. The author, Philip Bobbitt, he argued that the world is at a pivotal point in history. The traditional model of a nation state is giving way to this new model of a market state. The nation state was perfecting the art of over six centuries of optimizing institutions for war and for peace. The nation state promised to improve material welfare for citizens, specifically by providing security and providing order. In contrast, however, market states have a different proposition. They promise to maximize the opportunity for people. The nation state will use force and use laws to bring about results. But the market states, they use market forces and market relationships. And my belief is that this transition of power from nation state to market state, it's what's brought many of us here today. The fourth industrial revolution is led primarily by organizations and by technologies, not by nations. It's driven by profit, efficiencies, not welfare or happiness. So, interestingly, at the same time as the culmination of this capitalist view comes to fruition, we're seeing a rise in consciousness in the global population. Organizational profits, country GDP, these things are not sufficient foundations for humanity's future on the planet. And the reason is that we're seeing two forces, the forces of market success and the forces of human consciousness, they're in conflict with each other. And it appears that right now, at least, we cannot maximize both of these things. And moreover, if the world that we're in, or at least the world we're moving towards, operates using a market state model, then essentially the leaders who will be responsible for balancing these two forces and leading us into the future will increasingly be business leaders and not political leaders. And the problem here, as I see it, is that business leaders may not have ever considered this responsibility, nor may they want it. Their role has always been to maximize financial return for shareholders. But suddenly now it's the fate of the world is hanging in their hands. And we know that when the market system runs without strong moral leadership, that bad things can happen. Let's look at some events that have happened just in the last 17 years. And these events that you see on the screen are just a tiny few of the many that we have lived through in our lifetimes and that continue to happen year on year. This isn't one industry. It's not one sector or even one country or one culture. This is somehow hardwired into our market culture and the way organizational leadership practices operate. And many of the individuals involved in these types of scandals, they wouldn't perceive themselves as criminals. These are people who had morality, they had empathy in their private lives, they had families. The problem lies in our system somehow. An article published by the World Economic Forum says that the majority of the world's current environmental problems can be traced back to industrialization, particularly since the great acceleration in global activity since the 1950s. And while this has delivered impressive gains in human progress and prosperity, it's also led to unintended consequences. It's these unintended consequences that leaders all over the world now have to respond to. Our desire for survival rights rests therefore not in the hands of governments as much as we've seen in the past, but increasingly in the hands of the leadership of multinational organizations. As Gallup and McKinsey said in a report, we need to look to leaders who operate not just better, but differently. And I'd like to explore in this presentation what sits behind this drive for differently in their way of working. The acronym of VUCA is probably the most common topic I hear when I go and work with organizations all over the world now. VUCA, as many of you may be familiar with, stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And it's driven by things like, you can see, digitalization, big data, artificial intelligence, robotization, deglobalization, terrorism, financial crisis, climate change, global shifts in power. And these things have left leaders completely unable to plan and strategize in the way that they have done in the past. Traditional systems and traditional structures of industry, maybe also of governments, they're unable to adapt to a VUCA world. However, as leaders, both political and commercial, try to maintain their traditional approaches, in the face of a new world reality, the strategy fails. These approaches to success simply do not perform in a VUCA context. And the stronger the VUCA context, the less effective the strategies and the performance. It's like trying to use the wrong fuel in an engine. The engine will perform less and less effective, eventually the engine will break down. And the frightening thing for us right now, living through the fourth industrial revolution, is that we can see these changes. We can see that the engine is struggling, but we don't know when it's going to break down. We don't know how long we have. In the last decade alone, we've had some pretty serious warning signs in the political landscape, in the ecological landscape, and in the commercial landscape. Organizations and governments need to think and function in fundamentally different ways. And the chief economist of the Bank of England commented on this in a BBC interview. And he said management is too focused on short-term shareholder return and therefore prioritizes returning cash to them and increasing share price in the short term, even if it isn't in the company's long-term interest. And sadly, what I've seen firsthand in my recent years is an unwillingness in leaders to truly explore the need and the urgency to fundamentally change their ways of working. Instead, leaders are clinging on to their traditional known approaches. They're trying ever harder to deliver the results that's demanded of them. But as these approaches are failing, their position becomes vulnerable. And in desperation and maybe driven by fear, they resort to unethical behaviors. So pride, ego, resistance to change, it prevents them from seeing what needs to happen. And as I mentioned, you know, we see examples of this in the business world in increasing frequency. And now we're recognizing similar patterns of behavior in political leaders, all trying to hang on to ways of leading that simply don't work in the 21st century. However, if we look at countries that are flourishing in terms of well-being and happiness, not just GDP, if we look at organizations that are excelling in what they do, not just in terms of shareholder value, we can find the clues that will lead us towards the future. So let's look at some of the companies that are doing things differently. These companies that you see on the screen described as conscious organizations, they're often described as a teal organization. Teal is it's a color somewhere between green and blue. And this definition of a teal organization comes from a book called Reinventing Organizations by the Belgian author Frederick Laloux. And he's a previous consultant who worked with McKinsey, and he coined this term of a teal company to describe a new step in the evolution of human consciousness, which has led to the development of new organizational models. There are other colors that describe different organizational models all the way down to red. But let's have a look at the characteristics of a teal organization, this new conscious organization, because it is quite different. So a teal organization has a strong sense of purpose, ultimately something that makes the world a better place. And every decision that this organization will make will be tied in some way to that purpose. It will function as a whole. So it's not a departmental silo thinking, cogs in the machine. Instead, it's more like a living organism that adapts and responds to the environment that it finds itself in. And finally, these organizations are generally self-led. So this is where teams organize around a shared goal and where individuals have more autonomy, more freedom to find the satisfaction that they want and to fulfill their potential as an individual and use their talent. And these are the traits that we are going to need to nurture in leaders and in organizations. And importantly, I hope you see that many of these characteristics on screen can be directly applied to the reasons that we find ourselves here today. So, to summarize so far, we're seeing the rise of new conscious organizations, ones that demand a purpose as their core driver. But we also have a market model that operates on an old world system of profit and money as the primary measure of success. So we come back to this. And sat in the middle of these two things, we have industrial and political leaders who now need to step into a responsibility as moral leaders, as guardians of a future that right now is very much in danger. Now, you may wonder what exactly this looks like in a real-world context. So let's take an example of one of these teal companies that I'm describing, and which we're going to look at Patagonia. And we're going to look at what their CEO did just recently. The company had benefited from a massive tax cut as a result of a policy change by the Trump administration in the US. Shortly after this massive tax cut was announced, the company's CEO published this on LinkedIn. They were giving the entire $10 million that they're getting in the saving from the tax cut to charitable causes. Their belief was that the tax cut was unfair. The quote from the CEO says, "Being a responsible company means paying our taxes in proportion to success and supporting the state and federal governments, which in turn contribute to the health and well-being of civil society. Taxes fund our important public services, our first responders, our democratic institutions. Taxes protect the most vulnerable in society, our lands and life-giving resources. In spite of this, the Trump administration initiated a corporate tax cut that threatened these services at the expense of our planet." If you ask me what moral leadership looks like, or what I mean when I say a change in global consciousness, this is exactly what I mean. And it's shameful that the examples of this type of behavior are so rare. So where does blockchain fit into this picture? Well, this is from Stanford Business School. "The promise and potential of blockchain to drive social impact is massive. It has the potential to transform systems, leapfrog infrastructure, and can enable solutions that previously were not thought to be possible." This study into blockchain initiatives that were dedicated towards social impact found that many of these initiatives are still in the early days. They found 34% were only started in 2017 or later. 74% were still in the pilot stage. But 55% of social good blockchain initiatives are estimated to impact their beneficiaries this year. So we should be hearing the results of these things very soon. And beyond the hype, potentially transformative blockchain applications for social impact are emerging. This technology that we're here discussing, it's arisen at a really opportune moment. In the words of one of my favorite books of all time, "The myth of growth has failed us. It's failed the billion people who still attempt to live on half the price of a cup of coffee each day. It's failed the most fragile ecological systems on which we depend for survival. It's failed spectacularly in its own terms to provide economic stability and secure people's livelihoods. Prosperity today means nothing if it undermines the conditions on which prosperity tomorrow depends." This book is called Prosperity Without Growth. It's one of my all-time favorite books on this subject. So it's an exciting time in world history. Blockchain is giving us the technology and the commercial systems to free ourselves from traditional economic models, to release much of the control that previously rested with governments and with financial institutions. And this approach creates genuine opportunities that never could have existed in any other point of history before today. The Stanford study I was talking about earlier found that of the blockchain initiatives that they were researching, 20% were providing a solution to a problem that could not have otherwise been solved without blockchain. A massive 86% were bringing forward solutions that are material improvements on old systems. So they were accelerating the development of systems. And if we situate these findings in the context of a VUCA environment, the volatility, the uncertainty, the complexity and the ambiguity, we can immediately see that firstly, discovering new solutions to old problems, and secondly, making old solutions operate at new speeds is exactly the type of solution that is needed for survival in this turbulent and chaotic VUCA world. And no doubt it's this hope that brings each of you here today to this event. However, despite all of the promise, most literature on blockchain still comes with heavy warnings. If harnessed in the right way, blockchain has significant potential to unlock natural capital, to empower communities, as well as enable a move to cleaner, more resource-preserving, decentralized solution. But here's the second part. However, if history has taught us anything, it's that such transformative changes will not happen automatically. They will require deliberate collaboration between diverse stakeholders, ranging from technology industries to environmental policymakers, underpinning by new platforms to support these stakeholders. This, again, is by the World Economic Forum. So with the awareness that transformative changes won't happen automatically, the advice from the World Economic Forum is surprisingly clear. Deliberate collaboration between diverse stakeholders. And I believe that's what we see in this room today. It's what we represent. We are an example of diverse collaboration. But it's clear that this also isn't sufficient for the scale of the challenge. There needs to be a profound shift in the level of consciousness in both developed and developing economies around the world. Leaders need to step up to the responsibility that has fallen on them, even though many of them have never asked for that responsibility. In his book, My Vision, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, so Sheikh Mohammed of Dubai, some of you will know, he was reflecting on the state of the Arab nations following the financial crisis. And if you take a moment to imagine all of the global economic forces and events that led to that financial crisis, think of all of the things that he might have blamed for the situation in the Arab nations. His conclusion was actually very interesting. He said that the Arab nations suffer from a crisis of leadership and management, and the selfish tendencies of some leaders. And I would suggest that we need to follow the courage of his statement and propose that multinational industries and governments all over the world suffer from selfish tendencies. And there is no place for selfish leadership in an enlightened global society. A book I just recently started reading describes the problem in this way, that people tend to aspire to the status of leadership. It's an ego demand to feel important instead of the opportunity to use leadership to bring about positive outcomes. So we find ourselves at a point of transition in world history. We know that financial inclusion is considered a key factor to poverty reduction. We must also find a way through the institutional and social constraints that lock us into failing economic systems. In particular, we need to identify the opportunities for changes within society, changes in values, changes in lifestyles, changes in social structure, all of which will free us from the damaging social logic of consumerism and growth as vehicles for happiness or prosperity. All of this has been brought about by a convergence of worlds. We've got a global shift in environmental awareness. We've got a widespread dissatisfaction with political institutions. We've got a rise in the conscious organizations who are driven by purpose. And we've got a growth in the third sector, in NGOs that we see in the room today. The fourth industrial revolution is driven by technological advancement. So technology holds at least part of the solution. But the largest challenge that is created is a profoundly human one. How do we need to think and act differently in order to adapt and thrive in this new period of world history? The key to unlocking the potential of new technologies like MobiDollar lies not in the code of the software or in the financial systems that it's built on. It lies in the human psychology and the behavior. The technology has already changed. We're the ones that haven't. So, my advice to each of you that believes that as a leader, you are a force for positive change, is that we should prioritize the following behaviors. That we should be linking every decision we make to a greater purpose that we are supporting in some way. That we should prioritize long-term prosperity over short-term gain. That we should explore the potential in diverse partnerships and collaborations. And that we should not tolerate silo thinking in teams, departments, or in our partners. We should be using this new technology for the enrichment of mankind, not to generate wealth. So stood in this building, it seems appropriate to recognize we're not the first to discuss these types of connections. I'd like to leave the final words to some of the more enlightened leaders who have sat in these rooms before us, who are already engaged in the drive to eradicate poverty and increase levels of global happiness. And we've already seen words from some of these people. But in particular, I'd like to reference the words of Ban Ki-moon, who summarized my entire belief in 18 words. Saving our planet, lifting people out of poverty, advancing economic growth, it's all the same fight. So thank you very much for listening. Sadly, I'm only able to be at this conference for just one day. So I won't be joining you for the remaining days. So on behalf of all the people who would ultimately will benefit from the work that we do here, I wish you great success in the days that you are here. The slides for all of my presentation, because I know I went quickly through some of these quotes, these are all available to download, so you can go either to my website to download the slides or ask me for a business card. Thank you very much for listening.